What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Our democracy is hanging by a thread, but we know it's not about just winning and losing each battle. It's about persistence and building resilience.
That's why we're launching the Practivist Pod, the practice of activism made practical.
If you're looking for ways to get engaged or just for ways to stay sane, we want to help you navigate what comes next.
It's an exciting collaboration with political dynamo Jess Craven, author of the Chop Wood, Carry Water newsletter,
and grassroots activist Steve Pearson, host of the How We Win podcast.
Every week on the Practivist Pod, we're going to have important conversations with changemakers, give you practical ways to make an impact, have some fun, and inspire hope.
This is more than a podcast. It's a place for our community to grow our practice of advocacy for justice, equity, and progress.
Action is the best antidote for anxiety. So subscribe to the Practivist Pod today.
I'm Brian Karam, and I've spent decades covering politics. Now I'm taking you behind the scenes, one interview at a time.
Join us as each week Brian confronts the issues that matter, posing the questions you wish you could ask. No filter, no agenda, just the truth.
We're not here for sound bites. We're here for substance. Join me, Brian Karam, every week as we cut through the noise and get straight to it. This is Just Ask the Question. Curiosity will lead us to the facts.
Subscribe now on your favorite podcast platform. And remember, when you want answers, all you have to do is just ask the question.
Welcome to the Start Me Up podcast, part of MSW Media and the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. I'm your host, Kimberly Johnson in D.C. Today, my returning guest is Jared Yates Sexton. He's a Hoosier political analyst. He's the author of The Midnight Kingdom, A History of Power, Paranoia, and the Coming Crisis. He's the co-host of the Muckrake podcast, and his Substack is Dispatches from a Collapsing State. I always enjoy talking to Jared. He's so smart. He's so insightful. But before we get into it, the Start Me Up podcast is independent, listener-funded, and woman-run. Visit patreon.com/startmeup to see the variety of tiers offered, including the option to get a bonus What's Up episode just for patrons every Tuesday. It's kind of like my online journal, where I get a little more personal and I talk about whatever's on my mind. There's also an ad-free tier with a much shorter intro. Just visit patreon.com/startmeup. Now please enjoy my conversation with Jared Yates Sexton. Welcome back to the show, Jared.
Thanks for having me. I was saying before we started recording, it's been way too long since we've talked.
Yes, and I was telling you that it's because sometimes because you tell the truth, it scares me too much.
Well, I listen, it is such an uncomfortable situation, mm-hmm. and I absolutely hate it. But I think being able to talk and be honest about it and just compare notes, I think, is invaluable at this time.
Well, I know the last time you were on, you did, even though this was before, like, the worst case scenario happened with the election, but you absolutely did have things to be hopeful about. And we're going to talk about those things today. I mean, as well as all this just awful shit that's going on. But I just want to start this off with, your voice is really, really important. I saw you and Wajahat Ali did a show together on Substack, and I absolutely adore him too. He was just on my show last week. So the two of you together, oh my God, everybody should be following both of you. You guys are both so smart. And it's like Bob and I were talking. Oh, and you know, the other night I told Bob, my boyfriend, I was like, hey, I just booked Jared Yates Sexton, because we love saying your name. He's like, oh, man, I just booked him for Wednesday. And I'm like, no, he's mine.
No, anyway. I told Bob, I was like, one of these days we're all three going to have to talk.
Yes, and, yes, and that would be so fun. But it's like we this is a Jared Yates Sexton loving household. So we all love you. And everybody listening, if you're not following him, follow him, because, God, you're so smart. And so I want to just pick your brain about all of this stuff. But before we get into all of the hardcore stuff, I just want to ask you how you're doing and, like, what do you do to take care of yourself and get through all of this?
Well, I really appreciate you asking that, because I think in the midst of all of this, taking care of yourself, making sure that you're nourishing yourself, keeping yourself at a baseline and keeping yourself as regulated as humanly possible is not just self-care. It's necessary in creating a resistance.
Yes.
We lose sight a lot of the times of the fact that this isn't just political. This is also psychological. Authoritarianism is weaponized abuse. And what we are dealing with, I think anybody who has ever had to deal with a malignant narcissist, an abusive parent, an abusive partner, an abusive workplace, we recognize what this is and how it works. And so for me, I mean, it's funny, we're recording this on a Thursday. Thursday is my therapy day. And, you know, it's going into a room and talking about, like, I'm very active in terms of trying to recover from the trauma that I went through as a child. And being in recovery and healing is its own job. And it's really, really hard. It's so rewarding, but it's really, really hard, even under the best circumstances. And when you are living in a larger cultural, authoritarian, weaponized abuse environment, it becomes even harder.
I can imagine.
And part of the thing here is, if you actually take a look at how authoritarianism works historically and even presently, like, this is a mental health crisis. Like, we are literally dealing with a situation in which fascism and authoritarianism feeds off an unwellness in a society. And so to be around that and to combat it, it takes constant work to make sure, again, that you are grounding as much as humanly possible. You're keeping in mind what is right, what is wrong, what is good for you, what is good for others. And just nourishing yourself as much as humanly possible, because otherwise you'll burn out and otherwise you'll fall apart and you'll just say, I can't do this anymore. And they are really, really banking on the majority of people saying, I just can't do this. And that's how they win.
You know, I kind of want to add, because I don't even know what I put up. Oh, I know what I did. I put up the song, you know, Come On People Now, Smile on Your Brother. And then I put some kind of love is all you need flower sign, because I just thought we need to kind of have that energy, especially during these protests. I think we should do the, you know, we're seeing people dancing on the streets of LA, and the optics of the military going after people who are dancing is not so good. Anyway, the point I want to make here, though, is when I put that up, I got a reply from somebody who, it was a man, and he said, that's a privileged take. Or an entitled take, or something like that. And, you know, I don't know that other people are seeing this on Blue Sky, but I've noticed in the past couple of days, I mean, I've had a lot of mansplainers come on and tell me what I should be saying, but I'm not sure if they're, like, legit. I don't want to call them Democrats or even liberals, but, like, pro-democracy. Let's just call them pro-democracy. I don't even know if they're, like, legit pro-democracy. I don't know if they're troll bots or whatever. But I keep getting trolled by men, and they're either telling me that, you know, I'm coming from a privileged take or an entitled take if I'm recommending self-care, or, you know, and sometimes, well, I'll go over to their feeds and they appear to be what I call the far left, which is, when I say the far left, I mean the ones that are almost the MAGAs, you know, the horseshoe effect, that they're so far left, they're like practically mega. And I don't mean left in general, because I consider myself left. Anyway, I'm seeing that, and I just want people to know, I go over and I look at their feeds, and if they look like they are intentionally trolling, concern trolling, or trying to make you feel bad, I just block and I don't engage, because I feel like there's just no point. So I just kind of wanted to put that out there. I don't know if you've been experiencing that, and I don't know if women experience it. I don't know.
Well, but yeah, I, just... I, I think what you're bringing up is a really important aspect of all of this, because there's so many different components of it. One is that we live currently in a completely synthetic space where we have no idea what is real and what's not. You know, whether you're on Twitter or Blue Sky or whatever social media, there are so many operations that are going on from so many different directions, and so many sock puppets and so many sort of mis and disinformation campaigns that it's overwhelming sometimes. And I think what you just brought up is a really important aspect that I think gets lost in a lot of this, which is I am a leftist, period. Mm-hmm. And I would assume that in my own vision of the world, I fall in what you would call the far left. But what I would also say with that is that there is a component of what you would refer to as the far left where it's actually so ironically detached and so nihilistic. And this is something
that's what I'm talking about, the nihilists.
Yeah, there's a thing that's happened, and you know, I traced a lot of this in some of my research and organizing, where after the fall of the Soviet Union, a lot of leftists around the world came to the conclusion that their project was over. And that capitalism was unobstructable. And so as a result, they retreated into a sort of really aggressive nihilism. The idea that, you know, if the world's going to burn, we might as well get a laugh out of it, and we might as well harden ourselves. And I think everything comes down to not moderation's not the word, but it's the one that is there right now, which is, you know, you don't want to be in the Third Reich being one of those people in the films that is like taking a vacation and not worrying about what's going on, you know,
right
corner, you know, at a concentration camp. But at the same time, if we're going to effectively defeat authoritarianism, there are multiple things that is being asked of us at once, and it is not fair. This fight that is currently here, we didn't ask for it, and we don't want it, but it's here. And so you have to be able to fight it. You also have to create an alternative idea for how things should work besides the way that they are working now, and they have worked our entire lives. But you also have to be able to find the moments of joy that remind you what you're fighting for.
Right.
Like, what is it that we hold dear? And it's not enough to say, okay, Trump and these assholes are hurting people, and I think that's wrong. You also have to ground yourself in the belief that it's like, why is it wrong? Mm-hmm. It's not wrong because Trump and these assholes are doing it. It's wrong because people deserve to be treated better. Mm-hmm. And when you realize people deserve to be treated better, it's because of the inherent humanness of people. It's art, it's love, it's romance, it's imagination, it's optimism, you name it. And if you are so detached from those things that all you have is hate and you don't have love that shows you the direction that you need to go in, you're lost. And that horseshoe that you brought up, they get closer and closer together. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden it becomes more about inflicting pain or turning yourself off emotionally. It keeps us from being able to create something real and human and better.
Yeah, 100%. And I just want to be clear. Yeah, I would say people who identify as far left that are nihilists, because I feel like I'm far left too, in that I am like an Elizabeth Warren kind of a Democrat, where I believe we can have Medicare for all. I'm very, 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 very liberal. It's just the thing is, Republicans take every label we want to attach to ourselves and then demonize it. And then if you say liberal, you know, then I don't know, people who are far left think it's just all so confusing. So, I mean, ultimately, I hate to say that I'm a humanist, because people, like, I would always hear as a feminist the arguments from men coming on, well, I'm a humanist. Like, it's better than being a feminist or something like that. All these freaking labels. I just want everybody to be equal. I want there to be equity. I want things to be fair, even though I recognize that in this, you know, on this planet, we're never going to have perfection. But it should always be about striving. It should always be about taking care of our own. And, you know, so that's what I mean. I want to be clear here, because I think I do consider myself, you know, to that degree, a far leftist, but not the kind of far leftist that's a nihilist. You know, yeah, I mean, I'm just going to try to get done what we can get done when we can do it.
Well, and I would have to imagine that some of the people listening to this show and you know, I would have to imagine that their ideas about how the world should look after we get past this thing might look different from how I think the world should look. You know, I like, so for instance, like, I agree with you that Medicare for All is absolutely a better situation than what we have had. If this thing were passed and we were past this crisis, you and I could argue, you know, respectfully about whether or not we need to just expand a system or whether or not we need to just consider healthcare a human right. And whether or not it should just be completely privatized and go from, or I'm sorry, nationalized and go from there. That's a conversation that we can have. But currently, what we're facing, it demands a united front. And for me, membership in that united front, it falls on a couple of lines. And these are what I'm looking for from people to be allies. One, do you recognize that people should not be brutalized and hurt and killed and exploited? Do you recognize that what is happening right now is not just a thing that's happening right now, but it's part of a larger cycle that got us here? And should things change, like, and one of the issues, whether it's liberals or Democrats or whatever it is, so many people are still clinging to the world that came before Donald Trump and losing sight of the fact that he is a symptom of a larger problem. And they're looking, they've actually become conservative. They've actually now gotten to the point where they're like, yeah, we've lost a bunch of rights and protections and maybe we won't get those back. We need to protect what we have. And it's like, no. Like, we didn't go far enough with those rights and protections. And so we need to have something beyond that. But that's the type of conversation that you and I can get into and others can get into. And just like sniping at each other and just destroying each other, all that does is fracture any type of a coalition that needs to be created. And that is ultimately the most self-defeating thing imaginable.
Yeah. And then, of course, there's groups that are, I would assume, you know, maybe whether it's Russian or Republican or whatever, you know, fill in the blank, anti-democracy groups that are pretending, you know, there's, I'm not going to say any names here, but there is one particular person who I would not be surprised if the Russians are pretending to be this, you know, kind of far left group paying influencers, because everything that this influencer says is incredibly destructive, incredibly divisive. And, you know, I think that there's always going to be that effort to keep us divided. So, I mean, I agree with you that there, I mean, I think there's some genuine people out there who are not being paid to post, and they have these ideas that are nihilistic. And, you know, I mean, and then there's the, there's like what you're saying, there's the regular normal people who are sane and want this country to be comfortable for everyone. And then, yes, we can have that conversation. But yeah, I think there, I mean, we've still got to deal, or I say it like still got to deal. We have to deal with all the like all the bad actors, infiltrators online. We don't know, like you said, it's a synthetic thing. We don't know who we can trust. But I guess the whole point of what I'm saying, because I'm just going off in many tangents in my own head, but ultimately, I think right now we just have to be united. So yes, we need to be, we need to take care of ourselves. And then I think, you know, I'm just putting up a little PSA that if you see somebody online, you know, contradicting what you're saying, it's fine to have someone disagree, but go look at their feed before you start engaging with them, because I don't want to spend my day arguing with people that if I go look at their feed, I'm like, I don't even want to talk to this person. I'm just going to block them, you know? So save yourself some time. That's also a form of self-care.
It is. And I also, I want to talk about that because I think this is useful information for, you know, because you like me, undoubtedly you have a lot of people who will reach out and say, what am I supposed to do? Right. Because we have a larger system of power. Like, you and I can't get in the White House today and talk to Donald Trump. Like, and even if we did, it wouldn't matter. And meanwhile, we have these two parties that are both beholden to special interests that have much deeper pockets than you and I, unless you are in a different tax bracket than I think you are. And, you know, when you're talking about what it is the individual can do, we need to both be able to traverse the real life situations and online situations in a way that are healthy for us, but also conducive to coalition building. So for me, Kimberly, I was thinking about this before we got on. How many years have we been talking now?
I don't know. It's probably been like, I don't know, since 2018.
Yeah, it's probably been going on like 7 or 8 years at this point. Right. So in the conversations I've had with you and the interactions I've had with you, I've been able to develop trust. I know that Kimberly Johnson is on the right side of this thing and is an honest broker. Right.
Yes.
So you and I have been able to develop that over time. Like, we're having a conversation right now where I trust you and I think that you trust me.
Yes, I do.
And so that works. Right. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, in everybody's real lives, like, the people that you need to rely on, and we all sort of have this instinct, which is, you know, if someone comes up to you and they're trying to run a scam on you, you have an initial understanding of it. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. you're like, oh, this person is trying to work one over on me. But in your life with coworkers, family members, and neighbors, it gets a little bit in a gray area. There are all kinds of relationships where we know, like, we can talk about this, we can't talk about that. You have to sort of strategize it. Now's the time to find the people that you don't have to do that with.
Mm-hmm.
Now is the time to find the actual allies. And I'm not just talking about politically, because everything scales up from the personal and the professional. Like, in your workplace, everybody listening to this sometime in the near future, if they are in employment, are going to deal with ramifications of authoritarianism. And whether that's austerity or capitulation or collaboration, mm-hmm. whatever it is, you have to be able to understand which people it is you can turn to and have a real conversation with. And you can lay it on the line and you're not censoring yourself. And those types of coalitions are what's going to change the world. But it also happens that the spaces that we started out talking about are corporatized, privatized. Mm-hmm. And there's a reason why, like, if I post something on Blue Sky, I don't even know how many characters you're allowed on Blue Sky. But you're limited in what you can say. Mm-hmm. So anytime I put something out there, there is an incentive for someone who hasn't read everything else that I've ever written to assume the worst of me and say, well, mm-hmm. you don't care about this, or this is where you're at. Those synthetic environments, they can be useful in organizing and communication, but we also need to understand that the incentive behind them, the algorithms, the profit seeking, is all based on turning us against each other. It's all that profit is based on creating situations where we don't trust each other, where we fight with each other, and we're divided, which is what the wealth class and the oligarchical class, what they want. They want to keep us from putting things together and working together, and they want to keep us siloed and constantly, you know, bickering and fighting with one another.
Yes, and it's just so freaking exhausting.
Exhausting.
But I'm going to switch gears because I do want to ask you about this. When I had Wajahat on my show last week, he was talking about how, you know, initially he was saying that Trump was not going to go peacefully. He was told he was crazy, and then he was correct. Then he was told, you know, Trump's going to go for a third term. No, you're crazy. And he's like, well, look, he's already got the 28 March out. So his next thing is, you know, he thinks that he's not saying it's going to happen. He's just fearing, you know, what if it could? Martial law and then postponing or suspending elections. So I want to know, what are your thoughts on this? Because, you know, Bob and I talk about this at length privately. And right now, Bob is not overly concerned about that. So where are you on it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the $64,000 question. Right? And what I would say is this, is that Donald Trump personally is not curious or intelligent. He is instinctually a fascist. Mm-hmm. And so the way that he operates in the world is anybody who says anything to him that he doesn't like, he needs to crush. That is his instinct. Behind him is one of the most well-funded, most strategized groups that we have ever seen. They've been relentlessly at this since 1971 mm-hmm. in order to subvert democracy and basically give themselves total power. It just so happens they see now that there is a final chapter that, you know, inevitably, and we've seen this throughout history, when you reach that, like, precipice of control, you go for it. And so what we're seeing right now is an authoritarian move that reflects all of the authoritarian moves we've seen before, which is consolidation of power and intimidation of the populace through organized state violence and oppression. That is not going to just go away. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of questions now about where that goes and what it metastasizes into and whether or not the people will stand up to it in a way that will actually put this thing to bed. There's a ton to talk about there, a bunch of different avenues to get into. When it comes to elections, they have already shown a willingness to get rid of democracy. Mm-hmm. They've already shown a willingness to move away from it as much as humanly possible. And so when you look at something like 2026 or 2028, these upcoming elections, the idea that they wouldn't be held, there are always possibilities that could happen, including war. We're more on the precipice of World War III than we've been since the Cold War at this point. Some could argue that we're currently in that, and there are all these flashpoints that could go over. And yes, I could see them doing something like suspending elections. But I think what is more likely is what we see in places like Russia and Hungary, mm-hmm. which is what has been termed illiberalism or managed democracy, in which, you know, Vladimir Putin still goes up for election, mm-hmm. but nobody trusts the numbers.
Right.
Nobody believes in any way, shape, or form that any of this is fair. There's so many bad actors and so many bad actions. And so that, to me, seems like the direction that it would likely go if we are to go down that road. Mm-hmm. So for me, I think when you look at what we're dealing with, and this is a continuation of what we've been talking about, you have to be prepared for those elections in a way that provides an alternative to Trumpism and fascism. But you also need to go ahead and act in a way that says, you know what, if something like that occurs and we do not have these democratic organs that could possibly move us in that direction, we need to be prepared on our own outside of a party, outside of a political organ. We need to be prepared to keep fighting back and keep taking care of each other. And it's, you know, it's the equivalent of walking and chewing gum at once, but at a whole different level.
Well, see, these are the things that scare me.
Yeah, I don't like it either. I really wish, I mean, and I think that's the thing that a lot of people are still holding on to, Kimberly, and I look around and it frustrates me, which is we have been taught to treat politics as a spectator sport. Mm-hmm. It's something that you tune in to TV to watch right. all the storylines. Then in a chosen November, you go out and elect people. And that sort of passive democracy kind of got us in this situation.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to be able to like get involved as an individual and groups and coalitions in order to fight this thing back, because there is the possibility that like if we don't, we are going to end up in some really dark places.
Yeah. Yes, I agree. Now, okay, one of the things that I just wanted to bring up, and obviously I'm not an expert, I'm a feminist with a big mouth and I've been around the block a few times, but yeah, not an expert. But what I'm seeing here, coming from Gavin Newsom, who I just have to say this because I got a lot of pushback again from specifically men, maybe a few women, but mostly men. And, you know, they hate him. And I understand because I've had all kinds of feelings about Gavin Newsom. I remember reading an article about him, I don't know, 2 or 3 years ago, describing him as an opportunist. And it was kind of disappointing, and it did resonate. I used to watch him on Bill Maher, which I no longer watch Bill Maher. But when I would watch him, I was always so impressed with him because he was so sharp. He was like a walking encyclopedia. If you asked him a question about anything, he would have, you know, a ready answer. And I thought, wow, he's really impressive. And, you know, and then he basically platformed Nazis on his podcast. He referred to Abrego Garcia as a distraction. And he really pissed off a lot of Democrats. But now we're seeing his response to what's happening in Los Angeles. And I believe he's meeting the moment. And I think I saw a post of yours that basically said the same thing. So let's just take our personal feelings about him aside and recognize what he's doing. And then my question to you is, I think that, you know, I mean, any chance of winning back democracy, because we are being run by a fascist regime, would, it looks like now that it's going to be the people, and basically it's going to be electeds, but specifically governors. And I'm just wondering what you're thinking about that, and then where Gavin falls into that.
Yeah, so that's the big question of the moment. So I'll go ahead and say this to lay my cards on the table. I don't trust Gavin Newsom any further that I can throw him.
Yeah.
He's an absolute snake. I think, you know, the old idea of like judge a tree by, you know, its fruits. This is a man who has thrown gay and trans people under the bus. He has vilified unhoused individuals. He has basically worked hand in hand with Silicon Valley and corporate interest in California. But here's the other thing about this, Kimberly. He's an incredible communicator.
He's
an incredibly talented person. And you know who he reminds me of the most is Bill Clinton. He reminds me of this individual who was a generational talent in terms of communication. And we don't need to get into it too much, but what we've seen from Bill Clinton, not just as a politician, but as an individual, is that this was a person who was able to communicate with people and also did some really terrible things.
Yeah.
And when you do that, I think we can't be childish about it and look at elected leaders and see them as all good or all bad. Because, like, quite frankly, if you do that, if you say, well, this person's on my team and I can't look at any criticism of them, well, you're just engaging in MAGA. That's all that is. And we need to understand that anybody who runs, and this might be an uncomfortable thing for people to hear, anybody who seeks power at this level, you probably should be pretty suspicious of them and wonder what it is about them that leads them to these pursuits, right? With Gavin Newsom in this moment, I can say two things simultaneously. One, I do not trust him whatsoever. He has normalized authoritarianism because he thought that there was money and power to be had in doing that, while simultaneously he is handling this situation exactly the way it needs to be handled. That doesn't mean that I want him to be president, and God help us if that man comes near the Oval Office. But at the same time, you should be able to say, this is how this should work. And that communication strategy, I think, lays it out. So you currently have a couple of governors in him and J.B. Pritzker who have shown that they are meeting the moment. And, you know, one of the things that's happened with the depowerization of the federal government before Trump got in position was we saw the governors become much more powerful. And Ron DeSantis is a perfect example of this. He became a little tin pot dictator in Florida, right? And you have to be able to have a consortium of governors who are able to fight against state power. But at the same time, you can't raise them up to the level of a messiah or a savior. We've been led astray with that from everybody from Robert Mueller to Jack Smith to James Comey, and looking like Nancy Pelosi. We could sit here and talk about why Nancy Pelosi shouldn't be trusted or why Chuck Schumer shouldn't be trusted. And I think all of those complaints are valid. We have to be able to engage in adult politics, which says, you know what, this person, I've got real issues with them, but in this moment, they are doing what they need to do. That doesn't mean that they should be trusted with the keys to the kingdom. But in this situation, yes, I think Gavin Newsom is at least communicating what needs to be communicated.
Yeah, and I think I just want to reiterate that point. I will sometimes say I love, you know, like I do love Elizabeth Warren. But I don't like to really say that about electeds because they don't, it's not really about love. It's about, you know, who you think is going to represent you the best. And as you pointed out, anybody who is, you know, anybody who's looking for power and leadership, for the most part, they have their own agendas. They've got to have a big ego. That's part of the whole thing. And yeah, I mean, I think that it is a spectator sport, and it's kind of like, yeah, it's like rooting for a team. You know, I mean, people love what someone says. I see this happen all the time with the Never Trumpers. And I mean, I fell victim to it a little bit. I've kind of gotten out of it. But, you know, initially in Trump's first term, Steve Schmidt was all over, you know, MSNBC and all the shows with his $25 words, and everybody loved him. And, you know, I had the opportunity to kind of see the real him behind the scenes. And then I think he's also showed himself to people in front in the public eye. But, you know, I mean, I no longer feel the way that I felt about him. I was happy. I don't know. I had a positive view of him before, and now I don't. But I will say, no matter who it is, like, for instance, like Rick Wilson, I am not a fan of Rick Wilson personally, but I understand in this political fight, sometimes he is effective and he knows how to, you know, I don't know. He knows how to convince people. He knows how to do that political thing that he does. You know, do I see him as an ally? I don't know. Maybe a little bit. I don't know. I think he's in it for himself, but I think the Democratic Party needs fighters, and he's a fighter. I don't know if you agree with me on this, and you may not like him, which I don't necessarily like him either. But I'm trying to navigate my way through this, and you know, it's difficult because there's this whole thing that you just explained. We are not handling politics the way we should handle them. Plus, there's the social media aspect to it. And, you know, just a little side note here. All of it's just driving me nuts, and I kind of wish that I could walk away, but I can't walk away. You know, it's like I just want to walk away because I feel like I don't know what the answer is. I don't know if I'm supporting the wrong people. But and now I'm getting so sidetracked, I forgot my original point. But ultimately here, I think that we have to be careful on who we trust. It's like you're saying, don't, you know, let's not make them into superheroes, because when we do that, I think we lose. And like you said, it got us to where we are right now.
Well, and no, I don't think you got sidetracked, because I think this is the vital, necessary conversation that we're having. You and I are having an adult conversation right now, right? like one of the things that has occurred here is there's so much subtle psychology in American politics and politics in general. And you'll notice, like, it's not a coincidence that the people who support Donald Trump see him as some sort of a muscle man, and they refer to him as daddy, right? And one of the issues gross. That's happening in this country is that people have become so infantilized
yes.
that when they look to leaders, they see them as parents.
Wow, yeah.
And, you know, there is a moment in everybody's life in which you go from seeing your parents as godlike figures, infallible figures, right, to suddenly being like, no, this is a human being who's kind of screwed up and they've got their own problems.
Yeah.
And what has happened is that a lot of people in this country who both support Donald Trump and are also looking for all of these saviors and messiahs, they're doing it from a childlike viewpoint. Which is, this person is either all good or all bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you brought up Rick Wilson. Rick Wilson is responsible for some of the most destructive yeah. political strategies
yes,
that also laid the groundwork for Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And I also, personally, as someone who has been radicalized as a political participant since the Iraq War, I have a hard time believing that me and someone like David Frum are even close to being on the same side with
right.
each other. Or a Bill Kristol. You know, one of the most shocking things, Kimberly, was the day that I got a notification that Bill Kristol was following me.
Oh my God, me too.
And let me tell you something. David Frum, Bill Kristol, those types of people should be in prison.
Uh-huh.
They created a war on terror that killed over 1 million people. Mm-hmm. And the idea that they are suddenly on our side, or a Tom Nichols or whoever in the hell we're talking about, these people feel free to snipe away and do all these things. But just yeah. because yeah. they switch sides, like, this isn't Star Wars.
Yeah.
Darth Vader did not just suddenly become a hero as he was getting ready to die on the Death Star. That's fantasy. That's childlike fantasy. These people are responsible for an incredible amount of damage. And I resent, and this is the larger thing, I resent that their ship started going down, and like rats, they got on another ship and started telling people how to pilot that ship.
Mm-hmm.
Like, feel free to go after Donald Trump and do whatever you want within the Republican Party. But the moment you start telling the other side what they should do and what they should value, guess what? You need to find another ship. And you do not get to pilot this ship, because you personally, those individuals that have just been brought up, they're the ones who led to Trumpism.
Yes.
They're the ones who made that ship start to sink. And so if we're actually going to have something real instead of catharsis, which is what the Lincoln Project has offered, mm-hmm. it allows people to say, well, it's not all Republicans and not all the people who are involved in this, you know, are lost to this spell. That makes people feel better. It makes it feel more manageable. But going along that route, it's not real. It's not actually being an adult and being like, and you brought up Elizabeth Warren. I have followed Elizabeth Warren for the entirety of her career. And you know what? She has shown me that she actually cares about this shit.
Mm-hmm.
That she actually is a champion for people to get a fairer deal.
Yes.
And so that tells me that I can trust someone like Elizabeth Warren. That tells me that she's on the right side of these things. These other people, they have shown themselves repeatedly for the vast majority of their careers to have not just been on the wrong side, but here's the big difference also, Kimberly. They have not shown an ability to own their shit. They have not apologized for what they've done. They have not named what they have done. They've just sort of skirted away from it. And that is a major problem in politics, is when politicians are not willing to apologize and make amends for what they have done and instead move on to the next thing. And that, to me, that smells like being a grifter. That smells like back, you know, back before the internet, going from town to town, swindling people and getting out before the authorities get hit to you.
I think the only one that I'm aware of who did apologize and admit wrongdoing was Stuart Stevens.
I've talked to Stuart. And Stuart, when I talked to Stuart, I felt actual regret. And talking to Stuart and having a conversation with him, I was like, yeah, this is a person who actually does regret what they did. And that, to me, goes a long way.
Yeah. All right. We have to take a quick break, but we will be back after this message. Hey, this is Kimberly. Real quick, if you like this show, please consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/startmeup. Just look at the different tiers and become a patron today. Thank you so much in advance. Okay, we're back. I kind of want to tie in what you were saying about how, it, you know, what led to Trump, because I was listening to one of your YouTube videos. Let's see, it was the Midnight Kingdom lecture series. By the way, if you haven't read that book, you have to, and then watch the YouTubes. But it's episode 5, I think. Yeah, I think that's where I saw it. I could be wrong on the video, but it was still one of your lectures on the Midnight Kingdom. You mentioned the Tea Party and how it, you know, obviously we could go all the way back to, you know, before the Tea Party. We could go back to Reagan or even before that. But could you just like tease us with a little taste, because everyone needs to be reading your books and watching your YouTube. So can you talk about like the Tea Party and like basically a little bit about how it paved the way for MAGA?
Yeah. So the Tea Party, and it's so funny now talking about this because it feels like it was both 40 years ago, but also, you know, it seems like it was just a couple of weeks ago. So in reaction to the election of Barack Obama, and we could spend days talking about that and the consequences, basically what got created with the Tea Party was a group of citizens who were absolutely cooked to the gills by conspiracy theories. The belief that Barack Obama, who, you know, was an avowed capitalist, was like the worst communist who had ever come near the presidency, and also a sleeper agent of a satanic New World Order. Yeah. They started holding these rallies and stuff, and basically what happened was that Fox News recognized immediately the rhetorical power of this and using it as a cudgel against Obama, and so did the wealth class. And these were the individuals who have been attacking the federal government for decades, going back to 1971. And all of a sudden, this small little movement of people who were cooked to the gills with conspiracy theories were basically taken over, bought and sold, and trained and focused like a weapon by the wealthy in going after Barack Obama and creating a more radical type of Republican Party. And what ended up happening there, and I think this is something we need to take into consideration as we're doing the work we need to do, is that that group, which was a faux populist movement, it changed the political paradigm so much that the Republican Party had to look around and say, oh, are we going to become more like them, or are we going to have them replace us? And the Republican Party made the decision. They were going to become more like the Tea Party. So effectively what happened was that that was a fracture point in which the GOP became more radical and more authoritarian and more conspiracy theory focused. Mm-hmm. And that takeover of the Republican Party is both a hugely influential moment and destructive and dangerous, but it also shows us that if people come together and they demand something different, it puts pressure on a political party. And the political party has to make a choice, which is, are we going to change to bring these people in, or are we going to risk losing our hold on power? And right now, there is, since the 2024 election, a major ideological battle happening within the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. And you've noticed it not just in some of the unwillingness to engage in resistance or even stand in the way of Donald Trump, but you've also seen it in the scapegoating of the base of the Democratic Party. The strategist and all of the people around that campaign have not taken responsibility for how they failed people. Instead, they've blamed gay and trans people. And this new term that they're calling it, it's quote unquote, the groups. And so what you're actually seeing is that the Democratic Party is faced with either becoming more like what these quote unquote groups, which are people of color, women, poor people, unions, you name it, becoming more like them or holding on to billionaire donors and not having to actually change or offer an alternative. And so I think as we're facing this and we want to move into actual politics as opposed to spectator politics, we need to recognize that what always changes political parties is not a change of heart. It's when the people stand up and say, we demand something different. Mm-hmm. We're not going to continue to support you unless you recognize our very real point here. And I think that's something that we can learn from the Tea Party. It's very, very instructive, while also recognizing that the Tea Party was an absolute shit show and hurt this country and led to the development of MAGA.
Yeah, totally. Oh, that just it makes me feel scared because I just don't trust people are going to do it. But I guess, you know, I guess when we're pushed so far, that's basically when people are comfortable, they don't do anything.
That's right.
So, you know, when it takes being uncomfortable and we're uncomfortable right now. So I hope that it, I mean, I'd like to just put that intention out there, but I don't run the world. So I can't just put out that intention, but I do put the intention or hope or whatever you want to call it, that people figure this out because everybody just needs to listen to you, Jared.
Well, I appreciate
listening
that.
To you?
I'm glad you said uncomfortable and discomfort because yeah. I think anyone and, you know, to go ahead and bring the thing that we started out talking about forward, like, when people change is when the discomfort grows so large mm-hmm. that they have to make a choice.
Yeah.
And what's happening right now, and this is a hard pill to swallow, but it doesn't make it less true. Americans are experiencing what people around the world have experienced.
Yeah.
In this economic and political system of globalism, like, people who, and, you know, I'm sitting here talking to you on a laptop that was basically put together through slave labor and dictatorial mm-hmm. power. Like, those things that we're dealing with now are what so many people around the world have dealt with. It just so happens that Americans are feeling it now, and we're looking around and saying, this isn't okay. Mm-hmm. And that comfort that we dealt with, that privilege that we had, it kept us from recognizing that mm-hmm. this country has been on the wrong track for a very long time.
Yes.
And hopefully this discomfort can allow us to have perspective and clarity. And we can say, you know what? Not only do the people around the world deserve better, but we deserve better than the world before Donald Trump came down that escalator.
Yes.
Things were not perfect before that. In fact, a person like Trump and a movement like MAGA cannot come to power if everything's healthy and good.
Right.
There has to be a major, major crisis and major, major corruption and a rotting of the soul of a country in order for someone like that to take power. And so now we have a chance to use that discomfort. Discomfort, mm-hmm. much like pain, it's a message, yeah. right? It's a message that tells the body, like, something's wrong right now. And something is most definitely wrong, and stuff has been wrong. It just so happened that we were able to avoid it for a long, long time.
Wow, it's so interesting you bring that up. And I promise to you and my listeners, I won't go off on a tangent on this. But I am interested and practice intentional manifesting. And it's just so interesting the way that you just put that, because one of the things that I you know, I guess I can say I've learned or discovered is that when I am feeling, you know, discomfort in my personal life, it's you use that as a gauge, and it's like, you know, I mean, you hear people who know what they're talking about teaching this, and they say these uncomfortable things that you're feeling, these, whether it's fear or doubt or whatever it is basically a message to you. It's an opportunity. It's something for you, as opposed to something that is happening to you. It is offering you something. And so, you know, I mean, you could just take that in very practical terms, which is what you just did, and apply it, that when we are made to feel something that we don't like, rather than assuming the role of the victim, meaning, why is this happening to me? Because when you say, why is this happening to me? I think it is a victim stance of, like, well, then I don't, you know, I have no power. No, we all have some kind of power, even if it's just a little bit, because the little bit of power that I have added to the little bit that you have and the little bit that Bob has and my mom has, then we have a group collective power. And so I just kind of wanted to throw that in there because I think it's interesting on an individual level as well as, you know, a group level, that when we are uncomfortable, we should view that as an opportunity to make a better choice. So,
well, all
just
of that,
throw that out there.
No, you're exactly right. And I'm glad that you said it in that way, because I think what we don't get a lot of the time is that all of this scales up.
Mm-hmm.
It all scales from the individual to the national and the cultural, which is something that we've been told isn't true. We've basically been made to believe that we are small, alone, mm-hmm. and powerless.
Mm-hmm.
And that discomfort that you were just talking about, the essence of American privilege has been the ability to escape discomfort.
Yeah.
And that isn't just like ignoring it. That's what our entire economic system is based on, which is what things can you do using money in order to stay away from that discomfort. And for some mm-hmm. people, that's a drug addiction. For some people, that's a sexual addiction. For some people, it's maintaining a chaotic environment. For some people, it's buying things.
Yeah.
And a consumerist society is, which America most certainly is based on doing all of the things necessary to avoid the discomfort of sitting with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And sitting with what it is that you don't want. But more importantly, Kimberly, what do you want?
Yes. More importantly, what do you want?
And, you know, as I'm doing this organizing around the country and I'm like trying to bring together these coalitions and groups, there's an incredible conversation that's been taking place. And I've discovered it, you know, manifesting is one way of putting it. But basically, when you have conversations with people about what's going on in this country, the conversations usually start with, oh my God, things are so awful. I just feel so overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. I don't know what to do. I don't know that it's going to get better, which, by the way, is a valid way to feel,
yeah.
right? Like, that's a completely valid way to feel. And then you talk about that and you're like, yeah, that makes sense that you feel that way. Here are the reasons why you feel that way. Here are the things that have been acting upon you to make you feel that way. And if you, and anybody who, again, has ever been the subject of abuse, it makes you feel small.
Mm-hmm.
It makes you feel like the best thing that I can do. And authoritarianism, by the way, gives us three choices. One choice is to just close your door, ignore what's going on, and hope that nothing happens to you. You become very small. The next choice is to put on the armband and become violent and fascistic, and mm-hmm. hopefully you'll gain in the spoils. The third is stand up and be loud and do something and risk being destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
And that choice, it activates us. It puts us in this state where we're trying to preserve ourselves and we become more and more conservative. But in that organizing, Kimberly, I have found a magic thing, which is to say to a group, I want you to imagine that we're past this.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to imagine that all of the impediments to the things that you want in the world move out of the way. Right? Like, you have political power, you're able to make things happen, we're in a different environment. What are the things that you would want? And giving people the permission to imagine what the world should look like, as mm-hmm. opposed to what the world shouldn't look like, what you start to find is everybody agrees on this. Everybody agrees that we deserve to be safe, that we deserve not to be abused like this, that we deserve things like healthcare and housing, and we should be able to live lives of dignity. And when people start to think about those things, that manifestation that you're talking about, like, it can be both sort of esoteric, but it can also be practical.
Right.
Because
yeah.
the, answering the question, what should the world be like? That isn't just imagining. That gives you a North Star.
Yeah, it gives you something to work towards, yes.
It gives you a direction to go in. And it's not enough to look around and say, I don't think that children should be kidnapped and zip-tied,
yeah.
right? Because that's not even something we should be talking about. That's not even something that we should be dealing with. That is horseshit. It gives you the ability to fight for something. It gives you the ability to navigate all of this absolutely toxic and poisonous and, like, abuse. It gives you the ability to work toward it, and that will keep you going during the hard days. That'll keep you going as this thing continues to get worse, because you have a destination that you're heading toward.
Yeah.
And it tells you, if I continue, I can get there, and we can get there. And that, by the way, that is like one of the keys of what a revolution is. It's when people say enough is enough, and here's what I want. And well, if you can get there, you can get there.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, what you're saying, mm-hmm. it totally lines up with what I'm practicing. Because like there's a guy, his name is Neville Goddard, and he talks about living in the end, which is basically what you've just described. You take yourself all the way to the end of what you want to experience. So, in this case, it's a thriving democracy. And what do we want in that thriving democracy? And so, if you in your life, you want to have a certain kind of a lifestyle, it's like you take yourself in your imagination to that lifestyle. And then how do you feel? What are the things that you feel? And you kind of focus and give yourself those things before you see them in your 3D reality. And, I know you can't necessarily give yourself democracy, but you can give yourself the feeling of what does it feel like to live in a comfortable, democracy where your needs are met. Maybe not everything is perfect, but overall you're happy with that. And then you shoot for that. So it is exactly manifesting, and it's exactly how it's, this is just on a broad scale. It's on, you could take it all the way to the global thing. We're talking nationally, but I'm doing it just on an individual. So that's exactly, that's an amazing point that you just made to take people. And I think everybody should be doing this. Imagine you we've got this country that we're really comfortable in. Now what do you want to do? How do you feel? And what do you want to do? That is just perfect. Perfect. Well,
and what happens, and again, this all scales down and scales up. Like, this is what people struggle with, because they find themselves so often in situations that are unhappy and unfulfilling. But then there is a voice in their head that's like, just be grateful for what you have.
Yeah.
Right? And that conservative feeling, which has taken over a lot of our politics, it's like, well, we can't ask for too much. Like, there's right. So many things buried in that. One is self-worth. It's the idea of who do you think you are to want something better? Like, right. You're getting exactly what you deserve, which is what Trump speaks to, what fascists speak to. And then, like, sometimes, even when you know what is right and what it is that you want, taking that first step is really scary. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of people will choose a familiar hell over an unfamiliar future. Because you know what you're getting, right? If you have familiar hell, you know what that life is, and you're managing to exist within it. And that's relationships, that's workplaces, that's a community, it's substance abuses, whatever it is. If you are in that place, you're familiar with that thing, and you have coping mechanisms to live within it. Mm-hmm. And taking that first step for many people is really terrifying because you're stepping into something that could be better than everything you've ever experienced, but it could be worse. Mm-hmm. And that sort of conservative...
The
unknown is so frightening, but I think... most people, I know myself and the people that I've talked to and the people I've worked with, like, you have everything to gain because what you're dealing with is an environment, particularly politically, culturally, socially, that is abusive and awful, and it leaves us feeling miserable. It's going to lead to shorter lives, and it's going to lead to a future. And you and I both know this. If we keep going down this road and something doesn't change, it's going to be a disaster.
Yes.
Like, it's literally the equivalent of having a chronic illness or a disease that you're so afraid of going to the doctor and taking steps to figure it that it will eventually kill you.
Yeah.
And that's what America's going through right now. We have everything to gain by trying something new and trying to make a better future. And all we have to lose is this misery. Mm-hmm. And we just have to get ourselves in a place where we can start to take the steps going in that direction, both personally, communally, and also nationally.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like smoking. You know, you're addicted to smoking and you know smoking. I mean, I like what you said about we have the coping skills for this particular discomfort. But yeah, it's like when you decide to quit smoking, even though it's not even that unknown in that you know what to expect, you know, if you do quit smoking, you're going to feel better. But then there's that nagging thing in your head that wants you to go back to what, the human ego or whatever it is loves the familiar, even if it's not good for you. So that goes all the way to thoughts. You know, if you keep thinking thoughts over and over again, you know, right before the election, I thought Kamala was going to win. So I was completely wrong. But I did not want to spend my time before the election kind of focusing on her losing. I wanted to put my focus on her winning. And I thought, well, if she doesn't win, I'm not going to regret feeling positive or optimistic, but I will regret, you know, spending time feeling freaked out and uncomfortable when I didn't have to. And then as it turned, you know, I mean, I didn't have to, I don't think that it would have helped or served me in any way to be so fearful of Donald Trump the months before the election, because he wound up winning, or if you want to call it that, whatever, anyway. So why torture yourself? But we have this tendency to kind of go over in our head things that we're just familiar with, even if it feels bad, because it's what, I don't know, that's just the weird human thing that we do.
It is. And I mean, what's amazing about it, and like the more that I've sort of delved into this and researched it, like there's an evolutionary reason for this, mm-hmm. right? Like a lot of what we're talking about are things that we're not even conscious of or aware of that has been developed over the history of humanity. And to give an example, you know, speaking of the 2024 election, to try and put this into a context, what did we hear after the election? We heard from all of the strategists and all the Democratic insiders that they got very conservative in their strategy, right? They got very, very afraid of making the wrong move. And what do Democrats love doing? They love looking at polls. They love, you know, and by the way, the job of a politician is to change those polls.
Yeah.
That's the job. And so what do we hear? It's the idea of, well, if we try something, we could be wiped out. Mm-hmm. And so instead, you start playing not to lose as opposed to playing to win.
Win, yes.
And what goes along with that, evolutionary-wise, like back when we first started, like, you know, running around in tribes, and we would have a piece of land where we were able to, like, grow some crops or whatever, maybe those crops weren't doing well, but going out and finding a new piece of land was scary because you might not have any crops.
Right.
Right. And so we're all dealing with these unconscious things that, you know, occasionally in moments of clarity, we realize it. It's like, I don't want to be in this relationship. I don't want this job. But what has to happen here is that we have to find the courage to step out of that familiar hell and step into something that we deserve and something that feels better and will work better. Because if you read the writing on the wall, if you actually look at the signs both historically and what's happening presently, and by the way, we're lucky that Donald Trump and the assholes around him tell us what they want to do.
Yeah, exactly.
We know exactly where they're taking us. And to fight against that and demand something different is very, very frightening. But now the clarity is there that if we just continue to go down this path, we're not going anywhere good. Like the crops aren't even growing anymore. We don't have crops.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Now, all of a sudden, it's time that we stake out, we find something new. And yes, is it frightening? Absolutely. Is it uncomfortable? Absolutely. It's uncomfortable. But we have absolutely everything to gain because the path that we're on right now, it's not going to lead us anywhere good.
Oh, my gosh. I could just talk to you forever and ever and ever. But I'm going to ask you one more question before I let you go. And that
For sure.
is, what do you think we have to be hopeful about?
I think the things that we have to be hopeful about are embodied in the conversation that we just had.
Right.
Because I think what I'm seeing right now is a developing awareness throughout the country. And it's that, you know, we are faced with unambiguous evil. We are faced with a group of people who are disappearing children, who are ripping up every type of regulation imaginable, getting rid of every social program, destroying knowledge and progress. And, you know, on top of that, like, hurting the most marginalized people imaginable. I think that the awareness of that and the awareness that this is being carried out by a group of really malignant narcissists with billions of dollars that they didn't earn and that they don't deserve, I think that conversations that are actually honest and adult in nature as opposed to childish and looking for saviors, I think that is the most exciting thing possible, because I've studied revolutions, I've studied movements, I've studied things that have changed the world. And those conversations are always precursors to democracy, small d democracy, winning out against authoritarianism. And what's more, these people are weak as shit, Kimberly.
Yeah.
They are the most insecure, terrified individuals. They can't trust each other. They will cannibalize each other at the drop of a hat. We have the advantage because we have right on our side. And we have the advantage because we have the capability of forming long-lasting, productive, healthy relationships. And that's going to defeat them in the long run. It doesn't mean that it's going to be easy. And
right.
listen, there's going to be a ton of tragedy along the way. There just is. I wish that wasn't the case. But I'm very, very hopeful. I've seen it throughout history where we win. I think we are going to win, but it is going to be a long road.
Yeah. And, you know, I talk to my mother every single day, and that's kind of where she is right now. And I know she's disgusted, like many of us are, and it's upsetting and it's fearful, and all of us are going to be affected in one way or another. So I think your words are very important to, you know, to remember for the listeners, you know, especially if you're having a difficult time, just keep in mind that, you know, that this is going to be very hard and it's going to be a long road, but there is hope that there is the opportunity when we come out on the other side that we can rebuild better. Let's hope that we do. And, you know, Jared, you're so sharp and you're so smart, and I really appreciate you. So I want to first thank you for being on the show.
Well, Kimberly, I just want to say, since you reached out, I was so excited to talk to you because I always enjoy talking to you and having these conversations, and I really appreciate you're out there doing this work. And I just want to tell people very quickly, just to reiterate what you said, and keep this in mind. I don't know when this is coming out, but we have protests this weekend. We don't know what's going to happen with them. We don't know. I mean, we have ideas. Eventually, at some point, this is going to be hard. And what you just said is important. We're going to have scars from this. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a situation that is not going to be pleasant. It isn't going to be easy. We're going to have scars. We're mm-hmm. going to have trauma. We're going to suffer things that we shouldn't have to suffer. The place where I think we need to get our heads around is when we get past that, we're going to be there for each other.
Yes.
And we're going to take care of each other, and we're going to help nurse each other back to health and back to the place where we need to be. And that type of solidarity is what needs to be practiced right now.
Yes. Yeah, so big hug to you and to all the listeners, like everybody, like group hug, imaginatory group hug.
Absolutely.
And loving, loving, loving vibes to everybody. So, of course, I always ask this, tell everybody where to find you.
Yeah. My newsletter is Dispatches from a Collapsing State. I have the Muckrake podcast. Yeah, that's where to find me at this point.
All right, well, I've put your links in all the socials for this show on Patreon, and then I think it should also go up in all the other places. So once again, Jared, thank you so much. I love talking to you, and I know we're going to talk again.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. I couldn't have enjoyed this more, and be safe out there.
You too. Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Moji Alawodeyal from the Feminist Buzzkills Live Pod, the only podcast that helps you navigate the news in this post-Roe anti-abortion hellscape. Each week, with co-host Liz Winstead, we dissect all the news from that sketchy intersection of abortion and misogyny with providers and activists working on the ground. The cherry on top is we have amazing comedy guests who help us laugh through the rage. Feminist Buzzkills Live drops Fridays wherever you pod. Listen and subscribe, because when BS is popping, we pop off.
Care Talk with Laura Packard is a podcast covering healthcare in America from a progressive perspective. Our healthcare system is broken, and we all know insurance companies are out of control. If you don't have health insurance, or don't understand the differences between insurance plans, or have surprise medical bills, out of control prescription drug costs, or can't get the care you need, listen to Care Talk with Laura Packard weekly on Tuesdays. What's going to happen to your healthcare under the Trump administration? From prescription drug prices to health insurance costs, from healthcare for seniors and people with disabilities to reproductive care, from care for veterans to public health, including vaccinations. Healthcare experts answer your questions every week, and they go in depth on Medicare, Medicaid, the Affordable Care Act, private insurance, and more. Go to healthcarevoices.org/caretalk or search for Care Talk with Laura Packard on your favorite podcast app to listen today.